Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been more than 2 months since Illinois' stay-at-home orders began. Many of us share a feeling of uncertainty about when things will slowly begin to return to normal in our communities. What might going back to the office look like, or eating inside a restaurant a few weeks or months from now? There are still a lot of questions about the level of risk we're assuming in doing those things, and what activities are less risky as we try to adjust to a new way of life during a pandemic. We wanted to speak with an expert about this to answer some of our questions. Dr. Susan Bleasdale joins the 21st Now. She's Medical Director of Infection Control and an Infectious Disease Physician at the University of Illinois Hospital and Health Sciences System. Dr. Bleasdale, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We don't necessarily know when it's going to happen, but it is possible that in the coming weeks, some places may start going back to the office, or at least planning for that, in some parts of Illinois. What are some of the specific dangers that an enclosed office presents when it comes to COVID-19?
Well, you know, I think as we come back, there has been measures to try to reduce the transmission of COVID-19, but we have not eliminated it. And so as we come back together, there is a risk of transmission as we are coming together with those we haven't been sheltering with up to this point. And so coming back in into common spaces, it is really important to maintain distance, have measures to try to decrease infection by making sure if you have any symptoms, you're not coming to work. If you have any contacts with someone who is ill, that you make sure that you are evaluated, should that be someone that has COVID. And simple things like washing hands, wearing masks, and not touching your eyes, nose, and mouth that are opportunities to bring the infection to you.
Does it matter if someone works in, say, an open plan office versus somewhere where they have, you know, a private room where they can shut the door and work by themselves?
It does. So if you can have a private office, that's going to be limited exposures because it's just you and can be contained. If you're in an open area, you have to make sure that you maintain a distance and have measures to make sure that you're not coming in contact, close contact. So that's a little harder to do in an open area. So you just have to rethink. We have to rethink a lot of environments as we're coming out of shelter in place and reposition and reevaluate how we can maintain distance and still be able to be productive.
How should people weigh those risks when they're deciding whether or not their workplace is a safe place to return to?
So I think that's probably what hopefully a lot of businesses are doing right now to try to make sure that environments are safe. For those that are essential, they've been evaluating and trying to come up with new processes and workflows to maintain distance. And sometimes that's going to be changing operational processes and decreasing productivity potentially, but it's measures of safety to help to keep distance and assure safety for people when they're coming back to work.
Now, what about restaurants? We've heard a lot of talk. People are eager to begin at least opening restaurants, if not going back to them. When restaurants are open, what would be the risks of sitting and eating in an enclosed space with strangers, even if you are more than 6 feet apart from them?
So there is potential risk. You know, we hope that by spacing, that's going to decrease some of the risk. By other measures of, screening people that are working, maybe potentially screening people as they're coming into restaurants. That might be part of the way the new eating out might look. But the degree of spread from people that are asymptomatic or maybe early symptomatic is hard to tell. You know, when you're out in an environment that is communal, you don't know the status of the others in the environment and whether or not they have mild symptoms that they don't really know are COVID yet. And that could be opportunities for potential transmission. There have been some outbreaks related to certain settings where there have been people with either early or asymptomatic shedding and just in the right circumstances have created transmission across to other tables. Hopefully with appropriate distancing, that's going to decrease or mitigate some risk. But as you're coming together, you have to, especially with strangers, you don't know what their status is. So there's some increased risk as we open up.
Do we have any idea in either in Illinois or in the country or maybe even worldwide, how much of the spread of the coronavirus has been asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic?
I think it's hard to say specifically. The spread is related to several factors. The spread is related to how much virus someone is shedding. And as you are becoming ill, you can see that the curve starts to increase and that you're having an increase in the amount of virus that's replicating, and then you develop symptoms. The highest peak is going to be while you are symptomatic, so that's going to be the highest risk. And then it's the exposure. So it's the encounter and the emission of the amount of virus. So someone that has a lot of virus that is coughing and sneezing, that has the potential to spread a lot of virus. And then it's having contact. So I think that the overall transmission is related to multiple factors, but I think the majority of this is related to people in close quarters, still primarily related to high virus when you are either in the beginning of symptoms or fully symptomatic and can project virus and close quarters onto someone else.
And what about time? I think this is sort of related to the idea of proximity is also time of exposure. Is that a big factor? I've read that there's a formula for how to calculate that risk.
Well, yes, there's some, because as you are around someone in a prolonged period of time, there's more opportunities. So it's more opportunities for emission and projection of virus. And so, yes, it is one incidental contact. If it is significant, can be a risk, but that's if you have direct contact and impact. Say someone sneezes on you and they have COVID, that could be, very simple and very short, but a prolonged period where someone has the opportunity to cough, sneeze, touch surfaces, that's going to increase your risk.
And what about talking with someone? I mean, you mentioned sneezing. Obviously, that's a lot of their bodily breath, virus-laden breath potentially coming at you. But what about just talking with someone? I mean, are we still supposed to wear a mask even if it's just a brief interaction?
Well, for right now, yes. That's what we're recommending, that when you get within 6 feet of someone, because when someone is talking or talking loudly, or probably most concerning is singing, because there have been some clusters of outbreaks related to singing. And so that if someone has enough virus and is singing, that can cause more projection of virus into the environment and can potentially impact others in that way. So as we are returning, having masks is going to be a critical part of protection and trying to control the emission of virus into the environment and minimize transmission.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're speaking with Dr. Susan Bleasdale. She's an infectious disease physician at the University of Illinois Hospital and Health Sciences System, where she's also medical director of infection control. Dr. Bleasdale, we were just talking a moment ago about masks and in just talking to people. What about when exercising? We've also seen advice to suggest wearing a mask when you're running or walking, but then there have been other people who say that, if a runner is sick and jogs by, the risk of contracting the virus outside during such a brief interaction is pretty low. What's the best advice we have right now on that question?
So again, it's sort of multiple factors that play into that. So someone that is running or jogging likely is not very ill, because as you have symptoms, it's likely that is going to may have you feel achy, have you have cough and potentially shortness of breath. So not likely that you'll be having a good jog. So that
good,
means that
good
that's,
point.
less likely that person has a lot of virus. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is that in the outdoors, the impact of the virus in the outdoors is probably very minimal. Obviously, when you get in close contact, you can directly impact on someone that is within 6 feet. But if you're running and briefly passing by someone, that's unlikely that you would be emitting enough virus that would have a chance to impact on someone directly that would lead to transmission. So I would say running and cycling and things like that would be not significant risks in the outside. And they're also easy outside to keep a distance. You know, here in the city of Chicago, it's probably a little bit harder to keep a distance, but you just have to be cognizant when you're out running that you're maintaining a distance from others, and that you can briefly pass, but you want to not run next to someone and make them uncomfortable. So
there's another idea out there, and I think if we haven't heard about it, we might be feeling it ourselves, this idea of quarantine fatigue. People have been inside, in many cases, for many weeks, away from their friends, away from their family. The weather's getting warmer. People are starting to want more physical contact. There was a recent article in The Atlantic about how maybe the government's approach, or Illinois' approach in particular, is wrong because it's been kind of an all-or-nothing approach to containing the virus that some people say cannot be sustained over the long term, kind of like abstinence-only education during the AIDS or HIV crisis. And I wonder, what is your perspective on that? If we should be giving people the tools to be able to cope with this pandemic long term rather than this all-or-nothing, inside-or-outside approach?
Yeah, I think it's tough. You know, quarantine or isolation is isolating, and it can be very lonely. And I think there is just a need to connect with others. I think that's a normal instinct and a normal need to be connected to other people. And right now we are not connected. So I think that there is fatigue with this. There is frustration. There is fear too. And so you add in all those things, and there's multiple emotions. I think the issue of we are doing this, and I think that there's some maybe impatience, but maybe not, because this has been, we've been in isolation or quarantine for 2 months right now. And I think there's a sense too, unless you've been impacted, is it making a difference? Because COVID didn't go away. And I think some people thought that if we do this, it's going to go away, we're going to control it, and it's not. The whole point of the measures that we've done have been to allow our healthcare systems to be able to provide care and not be overwhelmed. And it has been effective. If you look at here in Illinois compared to New York, we have a significant number of cases, but the number of deaths has not increased to the same rate that New York had. And I think that is primarily because of our early interventions to try to shelter in place and limit communal settings and protect our long-term care facilities as much as possible. And so I think it's all of these measures that have led to overall decreases in the number of deaths relative to the number of cases. And so I think it has been effective. But I think as you are sheltering in place and alone and not working, or if you are unemployed or your business is not able to be sustained, that can have a significant impact. And as well, if you haven't had someone that's had the infection, or if you haven't been affected by someone that has been significantly ill, or unfortunately may have passed away. As this is continuing, I think more and more people are becoming affected by it. But I think that is some of the fatigue of the public in general. And I would say I am very thankful for what the public has done, because it has helped us to maintain capacity as a hospital system and as a state. But I feel the fatigue too. I know that my family is having a hard time being isolated. I have teenagers that are being isolated from others. I have a high school senior and an eighth grade daughter also, that they're missing out on some activities. And I feel that's sad, but I know that they're okay with that, because it's helping to protect us and make our hospital systems be able to maintain capacity.
And we've only got about a minute left in our conversation, but I just want to end on kind of a more big picture note. There's still so much we don't know about the virus. What are some of the things that you're curious about as an infectious disease expert?
I think really understanding how much this asymptomatic transmission, and then also after the fact, we're seeing that people can have virus for some time when they've been very ill with the infection, and whether or not that plays into transmission in any way. We're all just starting to evaluate whether or not antibodies are protective. We're hoping so, but we're really not going to find that out until the next couple of months to figure out if people become reinfected. and whether or not that antibody will last long term. And then, of course, I'm very interested to figure out what other treatments. You know, we have one treatment that had a good study that has already shown some benefit, which is great. And it was a randomized controlled study. That's really important for us to have good data to help to figure out what are the best treatments for these people. So those are the other things I'm hoping that we're going to find out in the next weeks and months.
Dr. Susan Blees-DeHill, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here on the 21st.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's it for today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey.